This Week in Startups is brought to you by Squarespace. Turn your idea into a new website. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, use offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Peloton. Bring an immersive, empowering, heart-pounding cardio experience to your own home. Go to onepeloton.com and use promo code TWIST to get $100 off of accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike. That's onepeloton.com and use promo code TWIST. And Airtable, the all-in-one collaboration platform that is flexible enough to keep up with the most creative, fast-moving teams. Whether you're building a product, designing a video game, or even recording a podcast, visit Airtable.com/twist today to get $200 in free credits. Upcoming launch events. Apply for the next Launch Accelerator cohort. Applications are due July 18th. Learn more and apply at LaunchAccelerator.co. You can also apply for our next Founder University, September 9th and 10th in San Francisco at founder.university.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to This Week in Startups. I'm your host, Jason Calacanis. I am here with Mike Savino, a venture partner at Launch and also one of the co-founders of Something Digital, an e-commerce startup in New York that provides e-commerce services. And we are in Sydney again for the second year in a row for Launch Festival Sydney. You can go find out about that at launchfestivalsydney.com. Why did a group of American investors come to Sydney? To dive the Great Barrier Reef and eat amazing food. Also, to find investments, to find companies that could grow into global concerns. And here in Sydney, in Australia, in the larger area, we've seen some great companies like Atlassian, valued at over $30 billion, and Canva, valued at $2.5 billion. A great founder can come from anywhere. And as investors, we're going to go find those founders. Today on the program, we're doing our office hours format. The office hours format's very simple. I do this with the companies I've already invested in, where every Thursday I spend about 2 or 3 hours in the afternoon sitting, having coffee, and asking my founders, what's your biggest challenge? Because if we can tackle, in all honesty, with candidness, what your biggest challenge is, well, then everything else is going to get easy. Sometimes founders and investors, they'll focus on the things that are going well, and they'll high-five each other, and it feels great. What I like to do is, hey, let's have an honest discussion, a discourse about what's really keeping you up at night. What's scaring you? And in a startup, there's always things that are going to break down or be scary.
Every day.
Right. And if you tackle them head on, things are going to go a little bit better.
Absolutely.
Okay. So first up is Kim McIntosh. Did I get that right?
You did, yes.
Okay. And your last name, of course, your parents were on the McIntosh team with Steve Jobs and they renamed themselves.
Yeah, of course. I wish. It's more the Apple McIntosh.
Yeah. So you have a startup called Bundy Fitness. Did I get that right?
Close. Buddy.
Oh, Buddy. Okay, great. Oh, yes. Two D's. Buddy.
I've been in Australia
Fitness.
Too long.
Yeah, I've been in Australia too long. I'm having my Bundy here. My Bundy.
That's it.
What is it called? Bundaberg?
Bundaberg.
Bundaberg. Yes. Oh, that ginger beer is my favorite.
It's delicious.
Oh, so refreshing. Mm-hmm. So it's a marketplace for fitness. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, it's a marketplace for fitness professionals. So in a nutshell, people can go on the platform and search, book, and pay for qualified fitness professionals in their area for private training sessions.
Okay. This is an idea we've heard many times in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like an obvious idea, but if you were to ask me what the top three were, I wouldn't know them. So even though it's obvious, I don't think there's a clear leader. Is there a clear leader?
No.
It's a pretty fragmented market.
Very fragmented market. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nobody's figured this out yet. No. How long have you been at it?
We released our pilot in September. So it took us about a year to get there and we recently released.
So September of 2018, we're sitting here in June of 2019.
Correct.
So you've got about 9 months of data and market experience. What have you learned in those 9 months?
Oh, a lot. So on the fitness professional side, they're all sole traders, but they don't realize it.
They're all sole traders, but don't realize it. Explain what you mean by that.
When fitness professionals are trained, it's more around the how to do their job as a fitness professional, how to take care of clients, and they don't really teach them the admin tools, so how to
the
manage
business
payments.
Side.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Great. What's your biggest challenge today?
Our biggest challenge is we always wanted to build our product and test it in Sydney, in Australia. And then once we kind of ticked all of our boxes, take it overseas, and our main focus was the US. But in the last sort of 8 months, people have been coming to us continuously going, this would do really well in Asia. So other than the obvious competitor analysis and due diligence you can do, we're sort of struggling with, well, we wanted to test it in the US, but do we pivot and try Asia first with all of this coming at us?
It's a fantastic question. Before you go to another market, it's always wise to have product market fit and to understand who your customer is. Mm-hmm. And so how strong is your product market fit, do you believe?
It's good. So that's what we spent the last sort of 5 months really zoning in on, and why we haven't expanded nationally in Australia. We really wanted to learn from both sides of the marketplace what exactly is working and what isn't, and we feel we've gotten there now.
Great. What's the business model?
It is a service fee per transaction, but we do have a subscription and a B2B play later on once we get more scale and brand awareness.
So you're taking a take, a percentage of every transaction, and I'm going to guess that's 20%.
15.
Okay. And people are fine with that, or do they complain about it?
No, they're fine with it.
Great.
Yep.
And how much does it cost you, and how much time does it take you to acquire an instructor?
No time at all. What did we do? We got about 50 fitness professionals on the platform in 3 months, and that was with no marketing.
Great. So this is a pretty easy one for me to answer. Yeah. Mike, do you have any other follow-up questions?
Who are the people that are telling you you should go to Asia?
People who have lived there, who have traveled there. I've got friends in Singapore who have said, you need to bring this here. I would use it. We need it.
But nobody in the fitness industry necessarily.
No, more on the client side.
More on the client side. And what you obviously had a plan. The plan was Australia, then US.
Yes.
What did you base that plan on? Was it data driven or just, again, some people telling you that's where it would work?
Yeah, it was more so. So I'm Canadian. I kind of have a bit of a tie towards the US.
Okay.
I've got family over there as well. So I've visited and I've trialed some of the competitor apps over there, and I've spoken to fitness professionals in the US to see what they've been using. And every time I told them what we were doing over here, they were really interested in it. Like you said before, no one's really winning this space.
Right.
So, you know, the first thing I would say is, how deep have you drilled for oil here? And so the analogy I like to use with my founders is, founders often correlate with ADHD, ADD, whether they have it diagnosed or not, or whether it's just a behavioral tick or it's an actual condition. I'll leave it up to the experts to determine. But many times I see a founder drill for oil and they hit it. Amazing. They're 20 feet down and they found some oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, great, we spent 9 months in market and a year developing the product, I'm assuming, or mm-hmm. something to that effect. So we're almost 2 years into this, and we're now going to take the rig, unmoor it, and move it somewhere else and start drilling again, which mm-hmm. is all the work.
Yep.
As opposed to maybe, I wonder if 40 feet down, if there's more oil or a higher quality of oil,
mm-hmm.
or if we could maybe build two rigs here and scale it. Two rigs in this analogy might be, you know, right next to each other, so they share a common commissary and staff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that would be, you know, doing this also in Melbourne or, yeah. or another city here. And so given that analogy, do you feel like you've drilled for enough oil here and that you've printed enough money here and that you've got a clear path to dominating and printing money in this market?
Oh, good question.
And what percentage along that way are you? If this was an oil field, what would your percentage ownership or, you know, realization of that oil field be?
Oh, can I say yes and no? We've done that. Yes, to the extent where we're focused on fitness professionals, is obviously you can sort of mimic what we've done in other areas. So whether we do that, which to me is the drilling down, getting more offerings on that.
Yep.
On the flip side, though, Australia is sort of a little pin drop on the global scheme of what's available out there.
So what percentage of customers and fitness professionals do you have in Sydney? 1%? 5%?
No, I'd say more towards 1%.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's a pretty easy answer. Mm-hmm. I think you got to get to 20% here and see what economies of scale you get before you go to any market.
Okay.
When you do go to the next market, there would be two ways to look at that. Do you have some competitive advantage in that market, or are you up against an unfair advantage in that market? So if you're Canadian and you have an unfair advantage in Canada because you've got a bunch of mates there who could start this up for you, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't have any friction to getting it started there, or maybe you would get a grant from the Canadian government and you know that really well, great. Mm-hmm. Now, if your spouse is living in Singapore right now and you've got a home there, maybe that's an advantage, right? Or if you have an investor in Singapore who says, hey, you know, if you bring it here, I'll lead the next round. Mm-hmm. So that I'll leave up to you to figure out.
Okay.
But step one is to really have that 20% market share and to print money, have a nice cash cushion so that you have the playbook. The reason Uber did well was because they had a playbook of going city to city. And every time they went to a city, the playbook got adapted to that local market and refined and then shared with the next city. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you're at 100 cities, 200, 700, and you know how that story went. So my wish for you is to make that playbook and get to 20% before you even think about the next thing. Well done. Okay. Let's give a round of applause.
Great.
Thank you.
Do you want to turn your idea into a website, a beautiful website? Well, if you did that with Squarespace, you're going to be able to blog and publish content whenever you want. You can sell products or services because you got all that great e-commerce functionality in there. And you can promote a physical or an online business, or you can announce that special event like I did, or a special project. Super easy. Squarespace is the answer. It provides beautiful and customizable templates and also powerful e-commerce functionality. So you no longer have to get those things in two different places. In fact, people had three or four different vendors putting together what Squarespace now does with one simple login and one simple subscription. You can buy domains and choose from over 200 extensions, and you'll get great analytics, search engine optimization, free and secure hosting, and of course, Squarespace's amazing 24/7 award-winning customer support. It's all optimized for mobile, so you're not going to have this phenomenon where you get super frustrated because somebody makes a beautiful looking website on their desktop and it looks terrible on an iPad or an iPhone. No, Squarespace looks great everywhere. Here is my CMO, Presh, browsing the templates on Squarespace to create a site in minutes. And he made this beautiful site for our portfolio company, Superhuman, and it's called superhumanwallpaper.com. A site that showcases all the Inbox Zero images. And look how quickly he just put that together. Bing, bang, boom, done. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial today. And when you're ready to launch, I want you to use the offer code TWIST to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. I know you don't need the 10% off, but please remember to use TWIST so they know we sent you. And if you want to, go ahead and thank at Squarespace on Twitter for supporting independent media like This Week in Startups. Again, squarespace.com, use that promo code TWIST and you'll get 10% off. Thanks again to Squarespace for being one of our longest running supporters. I truly appreciate it. Great job to the team over there. We love your product. Okay, let's get back to this amazing episode. All right, welcome back to Office Hours with Jason and Mike, the Sydney edition. We are down under here in Sydney for the second time. We had some great meals.
Awesome meals.
We good went food to tea here. Last night.
That was great. Amazing. Tasty menu, 13 courses.
13 courses. Tonight, Mr. Wong.
Right. Then
last year, Esther. That was fantastic.
And Tetsuya both years.
Tetsuya again this year.
Yep. Oh, and Momofuku this year.
Momofuku added to the mix.
We're doing well.
We're doing well. Okay, so we base a lot of our decisions on where the great food is. We try to check off all those boxes in addition.
It's a very simple plan.
It's a very simple plan. Find the great founders. Don't underestimate anybody. And then spend all the profits on great food and drink. Okay, next up on Office Hours, Pete Field.
Yes.
And your startup is called Ivory?
Avery.
Avery, spelled A-Y-V-R-I. Incredibly hard to say over the phone and pronounce, so we'll have to work on that. You're a photo sharing and video media sharing site? Explain to me what you are.
We are a new type of media, which is like Google Earth, but rather than Google Earth, everyone uses it to look at their house.
Okay.
We focus on visualizing things that are hard to visualize, mostly with GPS data right now. So things like the world's largest ultramarathon uses our platform because you can't send a drone up and show people what that's like. So we follow them through the terrain, and you can view it in 360, move around, dive in. Really amazing. The UNICEF's vaccine drone drop program uses us to show off how difficult it is to fly where they go, with a Strava of paragliding, lots of other things that are just difficult to visualize, and that's where we started.
So do you do this with renderings of the planet Earth?
Yes.
From Google?
Not from Google, we have our own 3D renderer.
Where do you get them from?
So there's an open source platform called Cesium,
right?
And that's that gives us a core. We license our map data from Bing Maps and another provider, and then we've got our own secret sauce that lets us do all of the way we manage moving. We've got a patent on how we move around in a 3D space and how we draw things into that planet and stuff
and
like that.
And so the output of this is a video that people can use on their website or television.
So it's not video because it's fully interactive, as in you can move around in it. But they put it on their video. They embed it in their websites. We've got an API that we license to our API partners.
So it would be more like creating a Unity 3D engine that I could walk around in, like Doom or Quake or a first-person shooter?
Something like that, yes.
Got it. So this has a very niche application. People who are curious about an ultra marathon can then go run the course in a browser window on their desktop, and I'm assuming on their laptops or iPads.
And phones and every platform, yes.
And you make money, I assume, by charging for this software to the UNICEFs or ultramarathons of the world.
So we have our API partners that license our API based on usage. So they embed it into their apps, and then we're just releasing our pro consumer version, which lets you do fancy editing and stuff like that.
Got it. So this is enterprise software as well as prosumer software, I guess.
Yes, and a free model for consumers as well.
So it's a freemium model.
Freemium model with API.
Consumers, probably this sounds like something they don't need, but it would sound like something a prosumer might need.
Consumers like it depending on what you're doing.
Have you had consumers use it?
Oh, yeah. We've got 75,000 users of the platform.
Okay. What do consumers use it for?
So like I said, we're the Strava of paragliding. Paragliders absolutely love to see what other paragliders are doing.
Strava paragliders.
Every paraglider uses us to visualize their flights. And then we've also got just runners and cyclists and all sorts of things.
Who is going to paraglide over some cliffs on the ocean in San Francisco will first go to your software.
No, they'll fly first.
Oh, they'll fly first,
yeah, they'll
record
fly first,
it.
Record it with their GPS tracker, and upload it to us, and then they can see it and share it with their friends and all that kind of thing.
Oh, fascinating. Hmm. So there is a consumer aspect to this.
Oh, definitely.
What's your biggest challenge?
So our biggest challenge is, like you said, this is very niche. It seems very niche. The way we're looking at this, everyone says start with a niche. So we've started with a niche.
Sure.
That's where we're going. This really does lead to a volumetric video type of play. And
define what volumetric video
is. So volumetric video
means,
is video that you can move around in. So
okay,
we'll be moving from the very niche of we're doing this with GPS tracks to this is where the photo thing comes in, is you take a photo. You know, when you take a photo, you should be able to move into that space and feel like you're there, as opposed to Instagram. You just kind of scroll through it now and you're like, yeah, that's nice. We want more.
So the idea is you see a picture of me paragliding, you can double click on it and then follow the route or something. Move around in that space.
So my family's traveling right now in Europe. They can put their photos that they take throughout the day, and I can view where they went in this 3D space.
Got it. So what's your question?
As you said, it sounds very niche, and we've been expressing how this isn't niche because I believe volumetric video is going to be a very, very big thing. And at the same time, when we're speaking to VCs and they say we're niche, we went back and took a look at what we were doing, saying, hey, you know, if we're able to do with the niche part is the GPS track, right? Getting people into the platform with GPS is small. When you start going into photos and stuff, you go, that's a bigger space and that's a much bigger opportunity. So now we're looking at it and saying we can get into this space with photos, expand to a larger market. But while we're raising, we're also trying to do a pivot. And so what advice do you have for somebody trying to do that? I'm sure we're not the first ones.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? He's not clearing market with investors. It's hard to clear market. You're pivoting and going out to investors, also hard.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a pretty high degree of difficulty. And it's, I would say, a new technology, emerging technology. What are your thoughts on assessing this as an investor and as a founder?
I think, it might sound easier to do the pivot after the raise, but I think your investors will be unhappy. I think you have to be pretty honest about what your plan is. And you don't need every investor, you just need one who likes your plan. So I think you need to be pretty kind of direct and straight about the building out that plan first, and then being able to articulate it to all the investors that you get to meet. You'll find one, I think, that likes it, because I think what you're doing is really interesting. It's very technically advanced. It has a moat. It's not like anybody else can jump in and do it. And there's going to be an investor out there that appreciates what you've developed. And I wouldn't be too afraid about describing that pivot. But you might want to think about the pivot a little bit, because just because it's niche doesn't mean it's bad, right? The more you develop it out, I think there's still time for that other part of the plan. Sometimes I think founders can get a little bit kind of, you know, you see this golden ring someplace else and you've had a plan and it's a good plan. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that other thing is going to go away, right? Build out and develop what you have now and then see that as something that is something that can be added onto the platform for additional revenue down the road. Jace, yeah. What do you think?
Well, it's. I think that's good advice. Going to investors while you're pivoting is a recipe for them to say, not yet.
Yeah.
And they'll pause. So yeah. It's just not going to work.
Yeah. Okay.
So I would say definitely don't do that.
Okay.
I think Mike makes a very good point about perseverance versus pivoting. And what's happening to you is likely that you are changing your North Star, you're changing your mission to appease not your customers, but the venture community. So what happens to founders is they get a cold reception from the venture community for a reason. And instead of interpreting that as we're not venture scale or we're not venture scale yet, mm-hmm. and we should not be going after venture investors, they start saying, well, I should make something that they like. The problem is, with that strategy is if you're pivoting to make something the investors like, well, they're not your customers. And they're not passionate about this. Mm-hmm. They're looking for you to be the expert on it. So we call this internally at launch founder pinball. Like a founder's a pinball getting dropped into the machine and getting banged off all the bumpers.
Yep.
And you kind of get spun. And I can tell you're a little bit spun by this. But the thing that you have that's amazing is a beachhead of passionate users. Mm-hmm. Most people never get to the point. To that point. And you should covet that and you should embrace it and slow down for a second and say, why do I need venture funding? You may not need venture funding. You have 3 or 4 employees?
Yeah, there's 4 of us.
Okay. And you've bootstrapped to date or you raised a little bit?
We raised a little bit.
Okay. And so this might be an opportunity for you to say, you know what? We need to make a low burn. You're already kind of low burn, I would say. You burn 20K 20, a month?
Yeah, 25. Yeah.
25 a month. How can I make this even lower burn and slowly develop the product, listening to the audience and refining it and learning and wait a little bit for the tide to rise? You might be rushing this and the VCs might be giving you the not yet right now because it actually is going to take you a little more time and you're just being a little impatient with the market. The fact that these experts love it, the people who are paragliders can't live without it, that's magic. Mm-hmm. That's magic because those people have an unlimited amount of capital. If they're paragliding, they're rich and risk takers. I know these people. And they have time to do this. Mm-hmm. And that equipment is thousands of dollars a year, if not tens of thousands. And the travel to go to these locations and the time off. I mean, these people are well-heeled. And so there is some market to service them with a paid product. And there are likely other ways to bootstrap this with doing custom software for very specific groups of people who get value from it.
Yep.
And so if it's me, I think sometimes you have to slow down and say, this is the moment in time to just focus on those 2 or 3 groups that we think really have deep product market fit, rather than going to a group of people who you have shallow product market fit. The people in the example of your family's traveling right now, you really don't need to follow along their path. You don't need to do that. It's not an acute need where you're like, I need to follow the path that I took the 6 photos. You just want to see the 6 photos and then do a FaceTime with them and go to bed. But for that person who did that paragliding, it's life and death, literally. And it's super important for them every run. They want to share it. They want to talk about it. The ultra marathons are very serious about what they're doing. That's another group of well-heeled people. So I'm hearing all this great stuff that you have diminished for some reason in your mind.
Right.
That's the problem here. And what it is it's your own fear probably that this can't be huge. Well, pause for a second and say, did you build this to build the next Uber or Google? Or did you build this because you were passionate about it? I get the sense that you could only have built this if you were very personally passionate about it. You might be the ultra marathon or the paraglider yourself. I'm so excited to talk about Peloton because I have my Peloton tread and I am loving it. I got so much to say about it. And I want to just let you know that Peloton is the greatest way to get cardio into your busy schedule. You know Peloton. It's the best cardio machine on the planet, and the Peloton bike will make you rethink how you look at cycling classes. It's an immersive, empowering, heart-pounding cardio experience.
bringing world-class instructors and real-time motivation to the convenience of your own home. Everybody in my family is loving it. The class variety keeps the workouts fresh with rides that span a variety of lengths and difficulty levels, themes, and even musical genres. And you can connect Spotify to it, so I did that. And you can connect Facebook. And I connected it to my Fitbit and put my workouts from there onto my Fitbit. Lots of amazing features. The installation in this case is amazing. And there are 12 live classes every day that you can choose from, and thousands of them on demand. And I even found they have meditation and yoga, all these other classes that I guess you get thrown in for free. I couldn't believe it. What a deal. So you can get motivated as you compete with yourself and everyone else on the leaderboard. It's a beautiful leaderboard there, on the live class leaderboard with real-time performance metrics. And you can put a heart rate monitor on and see your heart rate and get the chart, which I always love because I'm trying to get my heart rate to go up high and then low as quick as possible. You track calories, resistance, cadence, output, and heart rate for a great cardio workout, unlike any other stationary bike. I love the product. And here's a limited time offer. You get $100 off accessories when you purchase the Peloton bike. And you get a great cardio workout at home. So just go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code TWIST. onepeloton.com and use the promo code TWIST. It is an amazing product. I love it. Kudos to the team over there. It feels to me like the first time I ever used an iPhone or the first time I ever drove a Tesla. It's literally that high quality. Go get yourself a Peloton. You're going to love it. Okay, let's get back to this amazing episode.
I come from Worcester, Canada, so I'm very into my outdoor sports. Yes.
Got it. Yeah. So you have like a particular itch.
Yeah.
I suggest slowing down for a second and just saying, how do I get through the next 18 months, 12 months, get the burn down to 15K a month? Maybe that means somebody goes part-time or you go to three people. Maybe you do some custom work and give yourself and your team time to play, time to expand the product. And if the VCs gave you a little bit of a cold shoulder, it's because they're smart and they probably have seen this movie before and know that it needs more time in this gestation period. Is that the way you say it?
Yep.
Yeah. And I've never, what was the term you called this video?
Volumetric video.
Yeah. This is like
spatial media. These are the new
spatial
terms.
Spatial, I know. And like volumetric, I kind of have heard.
But yeah.
Nobody's using this. It's not, consumers don't care about this yet.
No.
Just they will like, one day.
But they will.
They will.
Just like Photoshop was something that a very small number of people who had very expensive digital SLR cameras used.
Yeah.
And then consumers eventually had Instagram, and then they eventually had Pixels, and you know, the market arrived. You're trying to force the market and force the venture community to force the market. It's not going to happen, in my experience.
Okay.
So the better thing to do is just embrace the community you do have. And if you have, if it was $25 a month, you have to ask yourself, are there 1,000 people in that group who would pay $25 a month, or are there 2,000 that would pay $10 a month? And maybe that's enough for now, and that would be success. Mm-hmm. Because what it does is it frees you to just iterate on the product and really learn and get there ahead of everybody. That's my wish for you. So just slow down, pump the brakes for a second. Because you might be following some path that's not sustainable. Even if you do succeed.
Distraction, I think.
It's a huge distraction. You're going to spend 6 months trying to raise money. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work. And if it does work, you're going to take $1.5 million and they're going to expect back 50X that. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to give them that because the market still won't be here. So you'll deploy the 1.5 million, you'll add 5 or 10 staffers, and then you still won't have the market arrive. It'll still just be 2,000 people who want the product right now. And that's okay. Because you want to just become the incumbent with those people, just like Instagram did. It was a very small community to start. Mm-hmm. You know. So how long have you been working on this?
So the original tech was built in CSIRO, the technology research agency here, about 3.5 years ago. We spun out a year and a half.
Great. Give yourself a little more time. And if the venture community is not ready, people who are passionate about this are ready. You need to be going after angels. And there are some maniac angels who are paragliding and doing all this crazy dangerous stuff who would love to write you a 100K check. And if you get three of them and you raise 300 and you're burning 25K a month, mm-hmm. Hey, now you got a year of runway. Their expectation is, I just want to see the product improve. And if I lose my money, I don't care. And they're not looking for 100X and they don't want board meetings and they don't want you to create an employee stock option fund. They just want you to make the product a little bit better. So I would slow down and go sometimes take a step back, go slow to go fast. All right. Continued successes. Please keep me updated on it. I'm fascinated. All right.
Great. Thank
Great
you.
More to come on Office Hours with Jason and Mike. Big round of applause. Thank you very much. Well done. Good job.
Thank you.
All right, welcome back to Office Hours with Mike Savino and Jason Calacanis. We are here in Sydney. Next up is Sean Greenhall.
Actually, that's possibly the closest that anybody's got it right. It's Greenhalge.
Greenhalge.
Yep.
Is it Scottish?
English. Apparently, English. There's a bakery in the UK.
All right. Now, I know what you do because we've met before.
Absolutely.
You've come to some of my events, or maybe you came to the Accelerator. You've emailed me.
Quite a few times, just been following you around and watching.
You're a super fan of the podcast. You have a favorite episode?
I'd like to say that I'm a learner. Favorite episode as of recently was the one that you did with Mel from Canva.
Okay, well done. Okay, so you're up on it. You have a second favorite episode?
I don't know. There's a second. I did enjoy the Office Hours that I did with Launch. That was almost like a podcast, but.
Great. Yeah, you came to the Accelerator and you were at the Launch Office Hours.
Absolutely.
Yeah, what did you think of that? You went to the real Office Hours, not this one where we meet companies we haven't invested in. You actually came and saw the companies I was interacting with.
Absolutely.
Who we've invested in.
Oh, wow. It was intense. I got to say, being put in front of several VCs and, being asked to pitch and people are giving term sheets, writing stuff down all the way from there. That was quite spectacular.
Okay. Nice. So your company is a Time Chi, which is a hardware and software workplace productivity device. It blocks distractions and interruptions. There is something called Tomato Timer or something in America. And I think this is based or inspired or evolved from that.
Yep. So it's...
Explain what that is to people who don't know.
Yep. So the device actually puts you into something called time boxing. So scientifically proven to help you with your productivity is to split your day into boxes of time where you do one task per box of time.
Okay.
The most popular one that's, I think, if not the top one, top two productivity methods is something called the Pomodoro method, which is...
Pomodoro, that's it.
Yep, Italian for tomato. Okay. Yes. So the tomato timer. So you spend 25 minutes of focused work and 5 minutes of break. And you do four of those, and then you take a long break. Great. So that's kind of what inspired us to do this. It was something that I didn't... university to great success, but when I started a startup, I was like, "Oh, need to keep focus." So went
and people who do this literally use an egg timer.
Absolutely. So,
but you've created something that looks much more beautiful. I'm looking at it right now. It's a little device that looks the size of a silver dollar pancake, or so.
An egg timer.
An egg timer, and it's got a beautiful LED. And tell me, what does this device do?
So with the press of a button, we've designed it to be a little bit like a game show buzzer. So you get that little endorphin rush. Would you like to give it a nice, good game show hit?
Okay, so I'm supposed to smack it.
Yes. So what it's done there is it started your 25-minute timer. In the background, it's connected to an app on my phone, computer, to shut down all of my digital distractions as well. So stops emails from coming in, stops Facebook from bothering you, and it also blocks me from going to Facebook or Reddit or any of those websites that take away your attention or, you know, try and correct people when they're wrong on the internet.
Brilliant. You've made great progress.
Thank you.
Brilliant. Mike, can you confirm that Pomodoro does in fact mean tomato? You're Italian.
Yeah, it does. Mean that, yes.
Okay. And it's interesting. Mike has been using a very similar technique for decades that I've known him, except he works for 5 minutes and then he takes a 25-minute espresso break.
That works much better.
It's working great for him. What's your biggest challenge, Sean?
Yeah, so being a hardware device, it's like, you know, we kind of get into the situation where we want to get this out to as many people as we can because there's a lot of network effects that we've had with this. Not only does it help you work, it helps other people work. I think you coined the term over-the-shoulder virality. It has a lot of that as well.
Yeah, that was actually David Sachs, real-world virality. We had a conversation. We were having a couple scotches, and we were talking about Uber and how Uber, his premise was, hey, when you order an Uber, when you first order it, you would ask somebody to, you might have somebody with you, and they'd say, whoa, is this your driver? How did you get this person? What is this? You say, it's an Uber, and they'd show you the app. And then you say, oh, how do I get that? And you download, and they'd show you how to use it. Or in the case of Cafe X, people would walk by the robotic coffee machine and it would be real world viral because they say, what is that? And then they would say, oh, you can order a coffee.
Yeah.
Absolutely. What is your big challenge?
So we basically want to get this out to as many people as we want, as we can.
Yeah.
The problem being a hardware device is we do have upfront costs to
make them.
Yeah, absolutely. Tooling up and things like that. When we started approaching investors, both VCs and angels, they were like, okay, this seems like a really interesting idea. I can see the problem, but we want to see some traction. So sure. We decided to do a limited pre-sale of 60 units.
Okay.
We sold those with a price so that we could show demand.
What was the price?
It was $99.
$99.
Yes.
Got it.
And there was an option of a software service that added additional capabilities to it. We did that one. We're still in the process of sending it out. It seemed like a little bit of a distraction to kind of like go to a Kickstarter and stuff like that. But since we did that to show that demand, now like the investors like, oh, we want to see, you know, how people are using it. We want to do this. And it just seems to be almost like excuses along the way to kind of like take away our focus.
Why do you need the hardware device? You know, the analogy I'm thinking about is IP telephony. When IP telephony came out, people gave you a hard telephone. But really, most people, all they needed was the software version of it to be able to make the calls and a Bluetooth headset. All the benefit that you're driving from this is the shutting down of all those distractions on the laptop itself. It seems like the hardware is a nice thing to have. It's kind of kitschy, but why can't I just hit a button on my laptop, it go into that mode, and get all the benefit that way? Because it seems that that's really the important aspect of the device.
Absolutely. Actually, that was something that we did about in the early days. Apart from the fact that it keeps you to your timing, the fact that it's a big, bright device that lives in the physical realm not only stops you from the distractions, but in open plan
workspaces. That's the reason it exists. His question is, why can't you just offer that to start if the hardware is tripping you up? Software shouldn't dictate how you work. You should dictate how it works, and that's where Airtable comes in. You probably are hearing all these great founders and venture capitalists and angel investors, and you hear them on Twitter, you hear them on podcasts talking about how much they love Airtable and all these clever things they're doing with it. Well, it's an all-in-one collaboration platform. It's kind of part spreadsheet and part database with a lot of templates and magic to let you solve complex problems. Airtable is an ideal product for founders who are price sensitive and time poor. You have not a lot of time and not a lot of money when you're starting these companies. Boy, do I know it. And you can create and optimize any process with Airtable. Founders use Airtable for a wide variety of use cases, from road mapping their product, maybe do sprint planning, how about some application tracking to get talent, fundraising. A CRM for fundraising is how we use it and all our companies use it. And instead of researching, buying, and managing multiple tools for your company, just get Airtable. It's very flexible. And once you start using it and you go down that rabbit hole, Maron, you're going to be addicted to this product. Here's CMO Presh showing us just how Airtable templates work. And they have all these crazy templates in a community that build them. It integrates with all the apps you already use. Slack, G Suite, GitHub, LinkedIn, Dropbox. We all use all those. And their customers include, wait for it, WeWork, Slack, Box, Airbnb, Reddit, Zoom, Kohan, Spotify, BuzzFeed. Everybody's using Airtable. Everybody loves Airtable. And you're hearing about them all over the valley because their tool is so effective. And here at launch, we love it. Some of my companies can't shut up about it. So here's your call to action. Head to airtable.com/twist and get $200 in free credits. That's 200. 200 from your boy, J-Cal. Go to airtable.com/twist and hear what all the buzz in the tech and venture community is about. $200 in free credits await you at airtable.com, but I don't know for how long. So grab those $200 in credits right now. Okay, how about we get back to the program right now?
We kind of find that it might have that sort of the initial friction to get it into people's hands. And part of the way that we've designed this is the fact that trying to build good habits like often involves both thinking of something, but also having a physical connection to it.
Yeah.
It's the same way that, you know, people dress up in athletic wear.
But that might be the friction to the purchase, right? The fact that you're describing yourself as a hardware company when you're really not. You've really invented some amazing software. And, you know, I own a company in New York. We have lots of developers. We have an open office plan. And sometimes they struggle with this idea of when they're going to get interrupted, when they're not. So that would be a nice visual cue.
Do you have that flag system in your system where they put something on their monitor that says, I'm in focus mode, don't interrupt?
We talked about it, and they didn't want that. Ah. They didn't find anything that they liked well enough.
Got it.
This might be kind of cool.
Headphones on equals don't disturb me. Headphones off means do.
So I think that has become not an absolute rule, but it's become a cultural norm where people kind of adopted that because that's what they see. Yeah. But there's always this little bit of indecision, right?
Some people use a post-it on the side of the monitor.
Right.
So what you do is you give everybody a post-it. You say, hey, listen, if the post-it is on the left-hand side, that means they're in the zone. Only interrupt if it's really important.
Right.
And if there's no post-it, you can do that. So I think what you're hearing here is, Sean, you are hitting a roadblock with investors.
Because you're a hardware, you're describing yourself as a hardware company.
Yes, and the, what Mike's trying to get through to you is that maybe the hardware is something that you do as the 2.0, and the 1.0, you just get a core group of people to start using it from the bottom up, and then maybe eventually offer a pro subscription, and really perfect that data side to it. And then if you had some virality where it was growing 2 or 3% week over week, and you learned how to do that, you would take yourself from a bucket that the investors are putting you in. So would you like to take the red pill or the blue pill?
Oh.
Do you understand this?
Yeah, the matrix?
You got the matrix down here in Sydney?
Absolutely. Oh, okay. It was recorded down here.
Okay, perfect. So, and they let you watch it as well. It came back down? Okay, the final version? Got it. Okay. So I always ask people if they want me to be super candid with them. Do you want me to be super candid?
Of course.
Okay. You come across as crazy inventor.
Thank
which
you.
Is great. It's a compliment. What you don't come across as is a growth marketer who understands go-to-market and is a CEO. Yet. So what you might be signaling to people is that you're part of the crazy inventor group. What we've learned as investors is if you give a crazy inventor money, you lose it. Because they're so obsessed with product. They're so obsessed with the next version that they never get to the business side. And that it would be better to give it to the business person who copies your idea and just executes ruthlessly. Mark Zuckerberg is that ruthless product execution machine. The people who came before him, like the founder of Friendster or the founders of MySpace, were really in that creative inventor kind of bucket, but not executors. And so what you're actually doing, and no VC is ever going to say this to you as candidly as I will, but I'm going to say it to you super candidly because I want to see you succeed, is get somebody who's your co-founder who has that piece, who compliments you as the relentless go-to marketing person, or fake it. And then say this, and just try this with some investors. The hardware is insignificant. We think we're going to let anybody make whatever hardware they want, and they can just plug into our software. Owning the software and the subscription is the business. And we know how to acquire people for free, because when you start using the timer, if you invite 10 people, we're going to send you a free timer if they sign up and pay. So we have this incentive for people to do it. And we figured out this really great viral coefficient. And when you're doing your tasks, if you you can send your manager what tasks you did that day, and then your manager can invite other people to do the same. So we figured out a great viral loop. If you're really good at this and you're a type A person who likes to manage their time really well, you want to show off. So we just put at the end in your report, share with my manager. And it turns out 96% of people do that. Now, Mike, if you heard my pitch as the CEO and I stated it like that.
Better.
Much better. Right. How much better?
I would buy this at that point, right?
So,
or I would invest in it. Either
yeah,
one.
Exactly. And so this is what you have. Founders have no ability to be self-aware of how they're being perceived. And I blame this not on the founders. I blame it on the investors. Because the investors are very concerned about hurting your feelings. I'm not concerned about hurting your feelings. You want to win.
Absolutely.
More than anything, right. You want to win. And if I'm the person who can tell you candidly how you're coming across and how to tweak it just a bit, which is what you see me do in my accelerator.
Absolutely.
That is the magic. And why do you think investors don't tell you what I just told you? Because you've never gotten that piece of advice, have you? From an investor?
Little bits, but... There's like,
that,
you know,
candidly, that bluntly?
Maybe not that candidly.
Okay. Why do you think an investor wouldn't be that candid with you? Take a moment to think about it. Why wouldn't they tell you exactly that you're coming across as the crazy inventor type, but not a serious business, marauding, growth expert? Why would they not tell you that?
I think just as kind of like, you know, the human behavior, it's like people are afraid of conflict.
That's part of it. And the reason there's a secondary effect there, which is they're afraid of that conflict. I think you got half of it. The other piece is, and Mike will back me up in this, is they don't want to lose the option of investing in you if you do in fact figure it out. Because they're scared, investors, that if they tell it to you frankly why you're not investable right now, that you'll be like, well, Jason's a jerk. When I prove it, I'm not going to invest in him. But when in fact, if you frame it as candid instead of honest or... And I give you that little preamble, like, hey, I want to see you succeed. Let me just give you this piece of advice. Then you're going to actually be bonded to me. Because you know what? You're probably going to try this. And I think it's going to work when you change the pitch to, we're a software company. The hardware is a commodity. It's a way for us in Instagram ads to get people to pay for a 2-year subscription. So what we tell people is if you spend $199, you get 2 years of the product and this free. It turns out 30% of people pay us for 2 years. This thing cost us $8 to make. So we came up with a stupid $8 device that is real world viral, and it gets people to pay for 2 years of software in advance, which services our cash flow. Right. Think
people
about how
love
crazy
SaaS
that
companies.
Is.
If you pitch yourself as a SaaS company, that's far more investable than a hardware company.
With a viral coefficient.
Yeah.
Right? So I gave you that one, yeah. Which is
I think that could be on a cell phone as a Bluetooth app. Of course,
you can use your phone, and when you do that, your phone looks like this, and it changes your home screen or whatever, and it blocks everything out, and it makes you put in your passcode 3 times
to unlock it.
So it's really arduous. When you start it, you can't use your phone unless you put in your passcode 3 times. And it tells you after you do it, it says buy the timer. So when you're using the timer, if you haven't bought it, it gives you an upsell on buying it, right? So I'm giving you like really cool ideas of how to use software and viral and marketing to grow without having to do the hardware stuff. You're obsessed with the hardware.
Yeah.
And that's the problem, is they're thinking, if I give you money, you're going to take it to Shenzhen and lose it. Just like if you gave me money, I'm going to the casino. I'm going to play poker. And that's how my wife thinks when I leave the house. She's like, you're going to poker? All right.
But I hear you win quite often, so.
I win more than I lose these days, so that's good. All right, listen, continued success.
Great job. You have
you really there. Have something here. And what you need is, did you build the app and the software yourself? Do you have a collaborator who builds world-class apps?
Oh, we do it all in-house.
Great.
Bootstrapped, in-house, everything.
Get the app to work super functional and forget about this for 6 months. To put this on the back burner for a second and just say, let's make the app perfect and let's make it grow virally. Figure that out and you will win the day. Okay. We'll get back. There'll be more. Welcome back. I'm Jason Calacanis, and this is my partner,
Mike Savino.
And we are here doing
Office Hours in Sydney.
There you go. Look, you're learning how to host a podcast, Mike. I'm teaching you right here, live on air. All right. Next up is Frances Atkins, and she has a company called GoodGives.com. It's an online good giving and event sharing platform combining gifting and charitable crowdfunding. Yeah. Give us an example. Welcome to the program. And
give us an example,
the best example. Of
how it works.
Of a crowdfunding, charitable, combining, gifting event.
Okay, sharing. So
an actual real world.
Yeah, sure. So we came up with this idea because we wanted to tackle the problem of unwanted gifts, and an example of where it was used was actually for my daughter's birthday, and her previous birthday she'd received 20 to 30 smaller value items, and we ended up taking probably 80% to charity because she just didn't respond to them, didn't want them, loads of Play-Doh in there, doesn't like Play-Doh. So next year we asked her to think of a gift that she would truly love to receive, and she really wanted a bike. She wanted a pink bike with a basket on the front. So what we did was we created a rapid prototype of this platform and we sent it out to a bunch of our guests. And what we found was they all contributed to towards her gift, and it hit the target amount for the bike and it kept going. And what we ended up doing was channeling the extra proceeds to a charity of her choice, which was Bikes for Life, which restores and recycles. So
how wonderful.
Yeah. So that's where the concept came up with, because we realized we didn't need all these things. And today, you know, people are very concerned about clutter in their homes, clutter in their minds, and you know,
Marie Kondo has made an entire franchise around getting rid of stuff that you bought last year. What is your biggest challenge?
Biggest challenge is we're super new to the startup world. We literally created the rapid prototype 3 or 4 months ago. And then when we got interest from guests, so they saw the event page and they went, oh, I want to use that for my kid's birthday. We created the back end to create the page so anyone could use it. Mm-hmm. And I guess where we're at is that, so there's two types of participants. There's the host and then there's the guest. We know from our testing that once a host sends out an event page that more than 90% of the guests will use the platform and they won't bring gifts to the party, which is amazing because that's the outcome we're trying to achieve. And we know that, so we've got different pain points that we're tackling. So from the guest perspective, it is around the fact that it's super quick and easy to sort of deal with the buying the gift problem, because
you're actually solving their problem as well, which is now you've relieved them of having to go to the store and buy something and then wonder if the person is going to like
love it.
So that's why you have such strong product market fit. We've been talking this episode about strong product market fit. Here's an example of very strong two-sided product market fit. Your daughter, the gift receiver, gets what they want, and the gift giver saves time, likely saves money, and saves the pain of giving somebody and that look on their face when they don't like it. What's your biggest challenge?
So that's the guest side. The host side is a completely different pain point around just not wanting plastic toys or, you know, not wanting to have to deal with things that they don't want in their home. And so guess what we're trying to figure out as we go to test with our early adopter market is what's the right messaging? What's the right positioning? Because we want the hosts, because once we get the hosts, we know the guests
what
come in.
What do you think the right messaging is?
I've asked quite a few people this. I'm getting different messages. So some people are saying, go after the guest. Like, so with the host, tell them that they're solving their guest's problem. But I know, having used the platform, that if you said to me, oh, you should use this great platform because it's going to make it super easy and quick for your guests, I don't know if that would really grab me. Okay. But if you said the other thing, I would maybe use it.
Have you read the book Lean Startup by my friend Eric Ries?
I think I have a long time ago.
Yeah. So this is something you want to start thinking about. There's a concept of an MVP, and there's a concept of testing. I want to give you permission to test this in the laziest way possible, which is there are a bunch of software platforms which will let you make a landing page that's exactly the same. And then when you have 100 guests come to 5 different parties, you would randomly give them 3 different messages at the top as a tagline.
Right.
And then what you would see, because you seem to be pretty scientific about this, you said 9 out of 10 people did it. You would see that message, and then you would be able to do cohort analysis and say, of the people who saw teaching kids to be better citizens, teaching them to give to people less fortunate to them. That's one value proposition. Another one, taking the pain out of parties. Don't waste time, by, you know, whatever. So taking the pain out of taking the pain out of giving. Now you've made a tagline that works for the person, guest. The guest. So one is for the parent, one's for the guest, and then you do one for the kids. Get what you want and help people less fortunate than you. And you combine that. And then you market to kids. Now you see which one resonates with those group of people. The other way you could do that as well is to email the people who've already used the platform and have that message up top and do the same kind of A-B testing and see if it says, register your child's next birthday and ask them what they want. It's a great device. And you say, what does your child most want? And you put like 6 different things, or pick a different one, put in an Amazon URL if you want, or pick something from Amazon, put it on the URL. Super easy. And then you can test that. So this is just testing that, since you're not from the startup world, you're likely not aware of.
No, that's right.
And this is what we do. Is this is the science of startups. Mike, what do you think?
I think this is a great idea. You know, I've had 3 kids. I have an 11-year-old now. And, you know, a lot of birthday parties now, people just ask you to donate to charity.
So
that becomes now, where do you donate the money? I think if you had a bunch of sponsored charities that you could tie in, it would even make it that much easier for the giver. Right now you don't have to think about going to another page. Automatically the overage goes in. The question though is, how do you make money on this?
A service fee on total funds raised.
Just
so, like a, you know, any crowdfunding site.
GoFundMe,
so the thing you have to worry about is that you're somewhat of a feature of something like Evite, all right? And you need to move quickly, because it wouldn't be that difficult for somebody to replicate what you're doing. And I think you need to create some messaging around you being the more noble choice. In a way, you know.
And then one of the important things that founders should think about is, what do you want to see in the world?
What do I want to see?
Yeah,
okay. So in Australia, we spend $1 billion on unwanted gifts. And what I want to do is turn a portion of that into gifts that people value, have meaning, and that they keep. And that a portion goes to...
So you're a do-gooder. You want to see the world get better.
I am.
And you should use that. You should become a brand ambassador for what you are. Because I think you speak to this and make it more personal. And I think that'll be a draw. Why somebody would want to use you than Evite if they added this feature to it.
That's right.
Yeah. Also, if you're going to do this in the world, life is short. And you should do, and you should bend the world to your best version of it. That's the beauty of being a founder. I have chosen to make my life's work inspiring people and investing in them to, you know, build products and services that make the world better and make me incredibly wealthy. That's what I've chosen to do.
Yep.
joking. But I've chosen to work with early stage startups in this format exactly. Mm-hmm. And sometimes founders, and we heard it here today a couple of times, they start thinking about pleasing other people. The beauty of startups is that you're not working for somebody else. You're working for yourself. Create the world and the office that you want to go to every day. When I come to my office at launch, when I'm driving there, I get the tingles. I can't wait to get there. Can't wait to see the companies at the office hours in San Francisco. Can't wait to interact with founders. Can't wait to read the next pitch in my email. Can't wait for Angel University tomorrow. Create the world where you get that tingly feeling and you get out of bed and you're not dreading work. You ever have a job you dread?
Oh, I have, yep.
And you're just like, oh God, you're on the subway, you're getting there, and then you're at work, you're looking at the clock and it's moving at half speed.
Yeah, this is a lot more fun. A lot more fun.
Keep it fun. Yeah. Keep it fun. Mm. Make it so passionate for you. Because if you create the world that you want and you make it passionate for you, you're going to be 10 times more effective. You're going to make better decisions. You're going to be more motivated. And you're going to be so attractive to come work for. And that's what investors are looking for. We're looking for somebody like you with a world vision that's so compelling that the people who are out there who think like you, and I think there are a lot of parents, mm-hmm. will say, I'm going to quit my job at big, giant companies, some giant bank, you know, one of the big four banks you have here, yep. that people hate or like or don't, whatever. And they say, you know, I'm going to get out of this bank. I'm going to take a 20% pay cut and work with this crazy person to make the world better and to teach our kids philanthropy one birthday at a time so they don't become entitled brats. And instead, they start looking at their birthday as a way for them to give back to society, because society is broken. It's consumerism is garbage. And I want to change that. You're that inspiring leader. Be that inspiring leader. Don't do it on your own terms.
That's what I plan to do.
All right. So now you know how you should market it.
Yeah.
You should market it from your heart.
Yes. Okay. Right? No, that's great. That's just really good feedback.
Go deep in there. Like you have something with purpose. I have a friend in America, Adrian Grenier. He's an actor. Mm-hmm. And he texts me every now and again. He's like a pretty famous actor in America. He was on a show called Entourage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know the name, but I know the show.
The show Entourage. Yes. He was the lead in Entourage.
Oh, okay.
He's the guy who plays Aqua.
Yes, I know exactly who you're talking about now.
He's a really great guy. And he will slide into my DMs every 3 months. And I'll say, Jason, can you help me with this? And then I look at what he's asking for help with. And I get a lot of requests. He wants me to tweet to tell people to not use straws. Or he's like, will you talk to this person at Starbucks with me to try to get them to do plastics? And I'm like, this guy's living his best life. He could be an actor, he could do whatever he wants. He's sitting there every day on his Instagram with his Lonely Well program. And you know what? He's attracting a large group of people who also think the same, that we should save the oceans. And the world needs more people like that and more people like you.
Your
success for you is that your kids, your daughter, is a better citizen. Mm-hmm. That's enough. Mm-hmm. And if you make 100 more daughters and kids like that, that's success for me. And that's success for you. And everything flows from that passion. If you don't have that passion in what you're doing, we can tell immediately as investors. We know. Mm. And we saw it earlier in this episode with the person who's making the spatial video. You notice he was trying to please the VCs instead of trying to please the paragliders and the ultramarathoners. And then you saw that click in his head like, yeah, Jason's probably right. I'm probably trying to please the wrong person. Please the right person. That's you, mm-hmm. and your vision.